Blog Talk Radio.
Kathleen Carroll, a board-certified psychiatrist in private practice since 2003. Dr. Carroll is previously the Director of Inpatient Services at the Bay Pines VA Hospital and the Bay Pines VA Medical Center. Dr. Carroll specializes in the treatment of children ages 6 and older and in children and also adults. In other words, from the womb to the tomb. Dr. Carroll is also an all-time triathlete and a terrific mother, I should say. So if you have any problems with your children, you have any problems with life, you have any problems with breaking through to the next level in athletics, give her a call at 813-689-9600. 2466. Guys, tonight's program is going to be dedicated to three people who lost their lives in the Oklahoma parade, the homecoming parade accident today. There are 34 people hurt, and three people were killed by a drunk driver. So we're going to dedicate our program to them tonight. Ty, how's it going tonight?
I am rolling, sir. How are you doing? Zito, how are you doing, my friend?
I'm well. It's good to be back.
Good to hear. Excuse me.
And we also want to say tonight that we gave you an update last week about Dr. Carroll's three sons in three different levels of football. All three won their games again today, so they are now the division champions, the West Coast champions, and next week they go for the state championship. If they win that, then they go to the following week. They go to Wide World of Sports at Disney World and play for the National. So we want to congratulate Ty Anthony, Brady Quinn, and Caden Jay.
Wow. You know what, Butch? I've known your family for quite some time, so I know you guys have some good genetics, but I got to get USADA on the case down there in Florida and find out what's going on, because these kids are consummate winners. Well, maybe WADA. I guess USADA is a little discredited at the point, but.
Yeah. So you don't have to worry about paying for college for those kids.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's what we're looking for. Yeah, and got to bring it up to also that she's done this all as a single mother. She just did get married, but for the last 10 years she's been by herself and has raised four boys to be extremely good students, extremely good athletes, and really, really extremely nice people. So
Is Dr. Carroll herself still competing?
Yes, she is. She won 2 weeks ago. She won a triathlon over in Claremont, and she has qualified again for the 15th time to go to the World Ironman.
Oh wow!
Which she
finished,
third in 2009, and I think it was seventh in the female division. In 2010.
So she's leading by example. She doesn't.
Oh, yeah. No, she's up. She and her mother are up at 4 o'clock every morning. They train. And then she comes home, takes a shower, goes to the office, and makes her rounds at the hospital and then goes to the office, and then comes back at 7 o'clock and meets me at the field. Where the boys have been practicing from 6 to 8, so she is leading by example.
Yeah, that's great. She walks the walk.
Yes, she does, and she talks the talk. And I'll tell you what, if you know their family and you know what their mother is like, and their mother has raised her daughters to be every bit of a man that she can take over.
Well, you got to understand, they've had to deal with you, so.
That's true. We
had no choice but to be strong.
He left her wife in psychiatry, and all she does is point to me. sure. Hey, Eddie Ruiz is getting back in the fighting game. Did you see that this
and,
week?
Yes, I did. He's actually, I believe he's on the card tonight, on the other card of the Terrence Crawford-Diary John fight. And according to Golden Boy Promotions, they're happy with his rededication to the sport. You know, Andy Ruiz was not necessarily what one would call a body Adonis. You know, he's been overweight throughout his career. It hasn't stopped his development, you know, from a standpoint of his record. He's, you know, still an undefeated fighter. But it has an effect on his image. He's not taken as seriously in spite of the obvious talent that the kid has. So, again, according to Golden Boy, they're quite happy that he's rededicated himself, and we should be seeing a new and improved Andy Ruiz.
Sure. Zeke?
Hopefully. I'll say that much, hopefully, just because rededication sometimes falls short. You can do it for a while, but then, I mean, and also it could ruin a career. If you're not dedicated, especially weight-wise, look at Joan Guzman. Just that example. And, I mean, when you're young, it's easier to do when you're young, but then that's also a habit. And you tend to keep habits the older you get. And you can't do that when you're old.
No.
You know what? You just made a very good point about when you're young, specifically with the weight, how you can get away with a little bit more. For the 30-day weigh-in for the Canelo Miguel Cotto fight, Canelo weighed in, I think, about 167.5. And no alarms were made because he was fine. He needed to be, you know, less than 176. But it was odd, though, because for the 30-day weigh-in for the Golovkin-Lemieux fight, Golovkin weighed in at 165. So you see how big Canelo is, you know, as a person. It just came out recently that Canelo said, you know, were he to win the title, if Golovkin wants to fight him, he has to fight him at 155 because he supposedly has not grown into a full middleweight yet. Now, obviously, at 25 years old, he can cut down. He can still cut, you know, more weight than a Golovkin can at 33 years old. But it begged the question to a lot of fans, is Canelo sort of looking to avoid that fight were it to happen? Or, you know, is there some science behind that? The fact that, you know, he's younger and he's still, you know, at 25, this still, you know, doesn't have his man strength, so to speak, just yet. So he's still not fully grown as of yet. And we know he's going to get a little bit thicker and chill out even more. But do you guys think there's any validity to what he's saying, that he's not ready for 160? Or do you think the fact that he routinely weighs as much as Golovkin, if not more, on fight night, remember, Golovkin weighed 170 for Lemieux, do you think that, you know, do you think there's no validity to his statement?
I think people rehydrate different, for one thing. Some people can take that weight, and some people feel more effective, you know, maybe weighing a little heavier. I mean, like we were talking about Lamont Peterson. He came in the Danny Garcia fight. It was scheduled for 140. He came in 165.
And he came in at 165 night of the fight.
So he's coming in to, what, 22 pounds over, you know, the weigh-in limit. That's him. Where other fighters may come in, you know, maybe 7 pounds over, more according to their natural fighting weight. What I'm seeing with Canelo is that he is young, and that he could burn that weight off a little more. He's younger than Golovkin, to where Golovkin might not be able to, you know, that's more of his natural weight.
You know what, it's a very good point, because to me, when I look at the two, and I've actually seen some old footage of their sparring, Golovkin still looks like the bigger guy, regardless of weight. I think Canelo's weight probably when he gets, you know, up there is probably a little looser than Golovkin's weight, you know, regardless of how much they weigh comparably. I think Golovkin's weight is a more natural weight for him, whereas, you know, Canelo, his is more a little bit of a ballooning as opposed to that just natural physical weight.
And as far as the fight between those two, I don't blame Canelo, just because you would want to boil Golovkin down a little more, take away some of that power.
Well, I think the one valid statement is Canelo hasn't had one fight at 160 yet. He's fighting Miguel Cotto at 155. He's been fighting at 155 ever since he lost the title, the 154-pound title to Floyd. So that's a comfortable weight for him. So he really hasn't tested the middleweight waters as of yet. So obviously, if you're going to test the waters, you don't test it necessarily with the biggest, baddest shark in the ocean.
You know, there was talk about Canelo. There was talk that possibly he might be getting in the ring with Manny Pacquiao as a farewell fight for Manny, but that doesn't seem to have worked out.
Yeah, no, there's no way Manny would go up to 154. Canelo's not going to boil himself down. Specifically at this point, Canelo, if he beats Miguel Cotto, there's a good possibility he could equate or even kind of eclipse the draw pay-per-view in a sense that Manny Pacquiao is. So, you know, it's not a feasible fight. Specifically, for Manny coming off the shoulder surgery, coming off the loss. He's looking essentially for one more fight. He would like a rematch with Mayweather. That doesn't seem feasible. There was talk of Khan. Obviously, he's going to look for the biggest money fight, but at the same time, I think he's going to look for a fight that's more feasible weight-wise and a fight that, you know, is a little less dangerous than the Canelo fight. If Canelo beats Miguel Cotto, his mandatory is Gennady Golovkin. He has to absolutely negotiate with Gennady Golovkin shortly after the Cotto fight if he wants to keep the belt. Obviously, in this day and age, we know belts don't mean as much. Canelo's a bigger draw than the belt is. But would he want to be accused of ducking Golovkin? That's something, you know, to consider. But Manny Pacquiao is not in Canelo's future at this point.
And he's not really in the driver's seat as far as Canelo goes. He's not – Canelo doesn't need Manny Pacquiao at this point. He's the next, basically, star there. So his star power right now is – it's not equal to, you know, maybe slightly lower than Manny Pacquiao worldwide.
But especially if he beats Cotto. Especially if he beats Cotto. And even though he's not as well known as Manny worldwide, he has that frenetic Mexican following, which is one of the biggest, you know, bases
pay-per-view
in the sport today. Yeah, it's one of the biggest demographics in the sport today. And it has been for years. Nothing new.
So, yeah. So, and that, he doesn't...
Go ahead.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, that's all right, go ahead.
Oh no, I was just going to say, in that, Canelo doesn't need Manny Pacquiao to bolster his career financially or, you know, credibility-wise.
There's no one in the sport right now who could essentially have a stern A-side claim against Canelo to where they could say, Canelo, you need to boil down to 152 like Floyd Mayweather did. Pacquiao, at this point in time, doesn't necessarily hold that type of stature over Canelo. And again, on top of that, that's not a fight that Bob Arum or Pacquiao, I think, would be looking for, specifically given the stakes of the last fight and what he has going on in the future.
And you know, you hit the nail right on the head, because Bob Arum had said, you know, I'm not advocating that Canelo could advocating it, because Canelo can weigh in at 170 on fight night. And that's just
exactly
kind of trouble. Yeah, he's just looking to beat the hell out of it. It's up.
But I think part of the problem is, though, is that there really is no huge money fight out there for Manny Pacquiao. Obviously, he's a tremendous draw himself. But we saw with the Bradley fight, with the Rio fight, the pay-per-view numbers dip a little bit. And specifically... coming off the Floyd Mayweather fight, or debacle, as some people would call it, but we saw that Floyd and Berto only did 400,000 buys. Again, a huge part of that was a lot of their buys were driven by the competition essentially by proxy between those two when they didn't fight each other. You know, people were buying Pacquiao fights to compare him to Mayweather, and they would buy Mayweather fights to compare him to Pacquiao. So essentially their other fights were like wars by proxy. But once they fought each other, all that kind of was done, and so now their fights aren't war by proxy anymore. They're just fights. And in Floyd Mayweather's case, some people don't even look at him, wasn't even looking at him as exciting fights. But the same is with Pacquiao, too. Because of that anticipation of that big fight is gone, he's not going to be, you know, quite near the draw he was. And on top of that, there's no big money opponent that's a feasible match for him. Probably, the biggest money opponent that would be feasible for him would be if they could lure Juan Manuel Marquez into that fifth fight. But he's flatly, you know, declined the opportunity to fight Pacquiao again. He's obviously resting on the knockout. So for Pacquiao, there are not a lot of big money options. The one big benefit is that they are doing business with Golden Boy Promotions. We all know Lucas Matisse was supposed to be the next guy in line for Pacquiao. We saw what happened there. So there's some different guys that Pacquiao could fight. Of course, we know Amir Khan's name's been thrown up. He's with Heyman. But the Danny Garcias of the world, there's some guys that Golden Boys could push out there. But nobody that's going to command those mega pay-per-view buys the way Pacquiao did with Floyd.
Or even close to that, honestly. I think, to be honest, the biggest financial move for Pacquiao would be to fight Amir Khan at this point.
Yeah.
just as far as the draw and everything, that's the best financial direction. I don't
know.
There was
some talk, Zito, of staging that fight in Dubai, so you would imagine there would be a tremendous live gate there. So.
Yeah, and it'll be pretty good pay-per-view.
It'll be a pretty good pay-per-view draw.
But as you said, and I have to totally agree with you, after that, where would you go? What's the next name on the list?
Well, Pacquiao essentially is saying he wants one more fight, and he's looking to run for Congress in the Philippines in 2016. So he's essentially looking for his curtain call, which is why, obviously, you look for the biggest money fight. But obviously there was some talk between his camp and Khan's camp. Khan said something about Pacquiao not signing the contract. Bob Arum said something about Khan not knowing what he's talking about and also talking too much. And so, you know, the rumors on that particular fight has been pulled back. So, it's just a wait-and-see game. But there obviously is no huge money draw. Your top four draws in the sport for the past, 5 years to a decade have been Cotto, Canelo, Floyd, and Pacquiao. Floyd's retired. Canelo and Cotto are fighting each other. Just leaves Manny.
Well, what do you think about tonight's fight with Crawford, Terrence Crawford? Either one.
Z, I'll let you start with that.
I like Crawford. I like Crawford a lot. I expect him to win. John is a good opponent for him, but John's also a good opponent for Crawford to look good against eventually. I think that Crawford, he's a sharp guy. He's sharp. He's very aware in all aspects of it. I like his skill set. The only thing I may worry about him is his division. He's in the 140 division, and that's more or less between 140, 147. That's not probably the hottest division right now. I mean, as far as competition wise. So, I mean, I would like to see Crawford against maybe a Matisse. I mean, Provetnikov. You know, somebody that's going to weight wise really push him, make him pull out even more. I think he's missing that. I think he's missing just a big name win against a big guy, and I think that's to come.
I think Crawford is an immensely talented fighter, as do most people, including the Ring Magazine ratings panel, who has them in their top 10 pound for pound. With that said, I think he should beat Diary Jean. Diary Jean is a good quality opponent. Diary Jean is ranked higher at lightweight than he is at 140, so that should tell you a little something about him. He has one loss. He was competitive, but clearly lost to Lamont Peterson. He has some things that could trouble Terrence Crawford early on. He has some good speed, some good pop, but he's not a consistent fighter, and he's not the most fundamentally sound fighter. And a fighter as fundamentally sound as Terrence Crawford, with the IQ and the ability to make adjustments that Terrence Crawford can make, should be able to go ahead and eventually take control of the fight and pull away. With that said, I completely agree with Zito. As immensely talented and smart a fighter as I think Terrence Crawford is, I think to crown him, so highly, as a lot of boxing pundits do, I think it's just a tad bit early. He passes the eye test on many levels, but so did Lucien Boutte when he was fighting a certain level of competition. To this date, Terrence Crawford's best wins are Ricky Burns, where, he went over to the UK and beat Ricky Burns, but Ricky Burns was in the middle of a three-fight stretch where he should have lost all three fights and lost two of the three. And then he beat Yuriorkis Gamboa, who's coming off like a 13-month layoff and who was blowing up to a weight he shouldn't have been at. Yuriorkis Gamboa is not a 135-pound fighter. He fought Crawford at 135. His best win, his only win at 140, is Thomas DeLorme, who's a good prospect, fringe contender. But that's all he is, a good prospect, fringe contender with some ability. He's not an elite fighter. Like Zito, before I crown Terrence Crawford, although, again, he passes the eye test. He has all the skills and fundamentals you want to see in a young boxer. But before you crown him pound for pound, you need to see the intangibles. How does he do when he fights a boxer of equal talent, or even greater talent, or of equal size, or even greater size, which is some of the challenges he would have in the 140-pound division. So before I crown him as an elite pound-for-pound fighter, I like to see his mettle tested. It's one thing to see skill tested. It's another thing to see mettle tested. The pound-for-pound greats, they have skill and mettle. They don't just have skill. Skill's not just enough to get you there. You got to have mettle, too. And so that's the one question that still remains with Terrence Crawford, and that question is not going to be answered tonight. It's not going to be asked tonight even. So
I agree. And if it is, it's either that, you know, he got caught and has to go through something, or if John gives him trouble.
Uh-oh.
How's it going, Dr. Chris?
I thought I heard an audible nuclear bomb on the phone, Zito.
I thought I did.
But you know what? Even if he has to weather a storm against D.R.A. John and he comes back and wins, he's supposed to do that. He's expected to do that.
Yeah.
He's bigger than D.R.A. John. He's known to be a talented, more consistent fighter than D.R.A. John. What really separates these fighters is when the stack, you know, when the decks are more evenly stacked. You know, again, a Lucas Matisse, you know, in spite of coming off his loss, we know what he brings to the table at 140. He's proven at 140. Right now, Terrence Crawford is the number two rated 140-pounder in the division by The Ring magazine. I completely disagree with that. Victor Postol is rated number one by virtue of his victory over, obviously, over Lucas Matisse. But Crawford's number two, and he's only had one fight in the division, and it was against Thomas Delorme. You can't rank him number two. Right now, honestly, even Adrian Broner should be ranked higher based on his body of work at 140, you know? So, again, I think we're crowning Crawford a little early, I hope, and I think he could be everything everyone feels that he can be. But until you really test the fighter's mettle, you really don't know. Some fighters, no matter how good they are, once you push back, they fold the tent.
And I'm gonna be honest. You mentioned Adrian Broner. I would like to see Crawford fight a guy like John Molina, Adrian Broner. I would like to see something like that. Just a natural 140 pounder who has fought in good 140 pounders. I like to see, you know, he seems to be fighting kind of light. If he fought DeLorme, who's not a hard hitter, exceptionally hard hitter, not at 140. And, I mean, I just would like to see Crawford in with somebody who's going to make him, you know, who's going to drive him back, make him have to pull out some things, not always figure a person out easily.
You know what? It's funny, too. We're talking about Crawford, and we were just talking about Manny Pacquiao. One of the things that's being, you know, spoken about on Twitter and rumored about is that if Crawford wins, essentially – let me just say this, that this is the beauty pageant for the Pacquiao fight. If he wins, he could possibly get that Pacquiao fight. Again, Crawford's had some decent wins at 135. No great wins to me, some really decent wins at 135, and a good win at 140. That's, to me, a little much. Remember, he wasn't even the undisputed champion at 135. You know what I mean? It's not like he was Henry Armstrong at 135, where he was the undisputed guy. So he was a titleist at 135. He may have been the number one ranked titleist and the most talented titleist. But, again, do you rank a guy number two off of beating a guy who wasn't even in the top 10? Delorme wasn't in the top 10 at 140, but we rank Crawford at number two. Again, I think it's a little premature. I think he has everything that the eyes say he can be that guy. But intangibles aren't always seen, and the tangibles aren't always written on paper. And it's the intangibles that separate the good fighter from the great fighter.
And not only that, it just intangibles show you who belongs in the ring and who doesn't.
Exactly.
I want to even go in the 140-pound division. Lamont Peterson fought Diaz last week. Forgive me for forgetting his first name, or the week before that.
Right.
Diaz, who looked like who could have been blown out the ring, you know, a little during the fight, he showed great determination and put himself in the fight. I mean, so now we saw intangibles from Diaz, a guy like that, after fighting a guy like Peterson during the time. That's what you're looking for. That's what you want. You want to see, you know, him fight a proven guy and pull those tangibles out, whether he wins or loses.
Exactly, because exactly. That's what you really know about a fighter. That's what you really know about a fighter. And, you know, I've seen him, you know, obviously they're the intangibles are there to a certain extent. I mean, he went over to the UK and he snatched the title from Ricky Burns. But I think you also have to look at where Ricky Burns was at. He had just come off of a draw with Fernando Beltran, that was an obvious loss. And then right after he lost his title to Terrence Crawford, he fought a tune-up and lost. So Ricky Burns was at a point in his career where things weren't going too well. Now, again, what I'm saying is something you can do with every boxer's resume. It's, you know, it's just the way it is. You can pick apart every boxer's resume. But the fact of the matter is that Terrence Crawford, and I love the guy, but he's just not proven at 140 as of yet. Beating DeLorme proves that you're a fringe contender at 140. It proves that you have, you know, a chance to maybe claim a title at 140, but it doesn't make you number two at 140.
I was just going to say 140 pounds, it's a division I think maybe heavy for Crawford at this moment. I think, you know, maybe I still think I look at his frame and, you know, if he can't boil down to 135, that's good and everything. I think he can, but I just think 140, his power doesn't transfer as much.
You know, he'll debate that with you because DeLorme doesn't get knocked out every day. He knocked him out, but I think that was, you know, he has good power and I think he knows when to sit down on a punch. I think it's so much technique with this kid. And I think he has a frame that can, you know, further grow into 140 and maybe 147. I think he has that kind of frame. But when we talk about 140, all right, when we talk about 140, we're talking about Victor Postol, Lucas Matisse, Adrian Broner. You got to include Chris Algieri. You also have to include Ruslan Provitnikov.
Right.
Lamont Peterson until he says, you know, he said he's going to 147, but until then, Lamont Peterson. You know, these are some big, sizable, strong guys. And you haven't been in the ring with any of these guys. So, you know, to me, it's hard to, you know, ascend you to number two when you beat DeLorme and all these guys are still out there. I don't care that Provitnikov is coming off of a loss. I know Provitnikov's a better 140-pound fighter than Thomas DeLorme.
Yeah. Possible.
Yeah, another friend of ours made an announcement last week at the Benny Briscoe's award, the awards that they give out in Philadelphia for the top fighters, and that's Stevie USS Cunningham, and there's a picture. I guess you guys may have seen it of him and his little girl who had the open heart surgery back around Christmas time, and she looks fabulous for having been through all she's been through. And of course, there's the proud father with a grin on his face, but he did make that he's coming back.
You know what? He's coming back, but you know where he's coming to. Stevie's going back to cruiserweight.
Yep.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I did read that this week that Stevie has decided to move back to cruiserweight for his next campaign. So here's the thing. Stevie, first of all, Stevie should only have one loss at heavyweight. The rest should be wins. He only lost to Tyson Fury. I thought he won every other fight that was either declared a draw or a loss. Thomas Denick, Glaskoff, I'm looking at you, my friends. With that said, as an older fighter, going back to cruiserweight, you're going to find that the speed's a little different. You know, one of the things that happened to our good friend of the show, Eddie Chambers, Eddie went to cruiserweight, and he was, like, completely outsped by the fighter he fought. He just couldn't move his hands to keep up with that guy. Eddie had been used to fighting and using his speed to kind of disarm and pacify fighters, and all of a sudden that advantage was taken from him. So, you know, I wonder if the same thing is going to happen to Stevie, specifically with Stevie pushing 40 years old.
Right.
Stevie can make this work out for him. I look at the cruiserweight division now, and there's no real alarms are ringing as far as that goes. You have pretty good fighters, but, I mean, none of Stevie's caliber. So I think as far as that goes, that he's not in danger. Stevie's also not going to be fighting the guys who's going to start ringing his bell, these heavy guys. That could take a break on his body, to be honest.
Yeah, I agree.
Also, Stevie, he's a tall guy, and he might have learned how to, you know, put some pop on his punch to actually make a difference. He wasn't knocking cruiserweights out when he was a cruiserweight before, but maybe coming from heavyweight, he learned how to, you know, get a little more pop on his punch, sit down a little bit more, because Stevie, he's been doing a bit of running. I mean, and he's had to. He's had to use his feet. He's had to use his range. So now it seems that
he won't have to necessarily work as hard to a certain extent.
Exactly.
Well, what do you – I see that there's been a
– Oh, real quick, speaking of Philadelphia fighters and heavyweights, it was signed on December 19th, which is one, Zito's birthday.
Whoa.
I put that out in the universe. Brian Bye-Bye Jennings will be returning to the ring against Lewis the Real King Kong Ortiz at 23-0 with 20 knockouts. Whoa. Talk about a fight that's hard to predict, right?
Yeah, so, true.
We got that to look forward to on Zito's birthday.
Well, why don't we I'll get a hold of Russell and get you guys in there to see it. It's at the
2300. Yeah, I don't know if it's going to be in Philly. That's I believe it's going to be an HBO Boxing After Dark card. I'm expecting that to maybe take place in some place like the StubHub Center in California. So we'll see. The one thing that boxing is notorious for is putting a fight nowhere near the guy's hometown. You know, kind of like Adrian Broner and Sean Porter, who are both from Ohio, yet they fought in Vegas. So boxing's notorious for that. And but then again, Brian Jennings, you know, coming off his loss over Klitschko, maybe he has the stature to have that fight in his hometown. But we'll see. I don't think so, but we'll see.
It'll be a good fight. That Klitschko experience for Jennings was nothing but positive.
The one thing that keeps my eyes open to this fight, first of all, is Ortiz has legitimate power, and he's quicker. He's a bigger guy, but, you know, Brian Jennings is quite a bigger guy. It's no big deal. But Ortiz is quicker. He's kind of quick-fisted. And you know what he is, too? He's a blasted Cuban, just like Mike Ortiz. And you know those Cubans, man. I don't care that King Kong comes forward. Just like the guy who fought Pascal. Remember him? The Cuban that fought Pascal, a big guy. He comes forward, was fighting like, you know, the aggressive monster. He, when push comes to shove, the Cubans have that vast amateur pedigree they can always fall back on. And what I saw from Brian Ortiz against Brian Bye-Bye Jennings against Mike Ortiz was the versatility of Mike Ortiz was giving him trouble. What gave Mike Ortiz trouble was the lungs. His lungs. Mike Perez, I should say.
And
Zito said that. Zito said, before the fight, Zito said to me, Mike Perez is going to look great for 3 rounds. And that's going to be about it. He's going to run out of gas. And that's, you know, what happened. You know, we haven't seen Lewis Ortiz in a deep fight with a worker and a consummate professional like Brian Jennings, so it'll be interesting. But if Brian Jennings is the favorite, King Kong is a really, really – he's as live an underdog as he was against Godzilla. Let me put it to you that way.
Hey, guys, we're joined by Dr. Chris.
Oh, there
Chris,
he is.
How you doing?
Hey,
how
guys,
you doing tonight, Chris?
How you doing? I don't know what you talked about so far, but – did you talk about the Lemieux fight tonight?
No, we did. We were waiting for you.
Okay. I was figuring Lemieux would give him a little tougher battle, but I never realized how patient Triple G is with that jab. He just jabbed until he drove that poor kid nuts. And got a hammering jab, and he was very patient, and he totally demoralized him, and then when it counted, he started going to the body, and that's all it took. And then he got that smashed nose. I don't think that helped him any either.
Nah.
No.
What do you think made his nose bleed so bad? The jab or the I didn't see any other punches hit him in the face.
Jab. It was the jab. It didn't help that. It looked like Lemieux had trained, you know, literally for 10 weeks for a slugfest. Because once Golovkin started jabbing, Lemieux looked like he had never seen a jab before. He had no answer for the jab. All I kept hearing in my mind was Rocky Balboa screaming at Tommy Morrison in the Rocky movies, "It's not illegal to duck the jab, son." Because literally, Lemieux was getting hit with the jab like he would have been arrested if he ducked it. I couldn't buy it. I guess he wasn't expecting to go up. You know, and we're allowed to be shocked because we're not in there fighting. He's not supposed to be shocked by a jab. He wasn't supposed to be shocked by that.
It was like a damn sledgehammer. Boom, in the face. And the guy got totally demoralized because he couldn't come forward. The jab was killing him.
It looked to me that Lemieux trained for 10 weeks to be Golovkin's sparring partner. Just to be honest, he didn't fight in any distance that was safe for him. He didn't fight all the way away from Golovkin to avoid the jab when it first started going through his face in round one. He didn't, you know, get close to the times he did try to get close to Golovkin and skin to skin with him. He was successful in not getting hurt. He didn't do much damage because he was scared of Golovkin's power. But it was beneficial to himself when he was there because Golovkin, for the most part, either kind of backed away. He's not a total backfoot fighter, but what Golovkin will do, he will step back and jab and change that distance on you. He slightly changed it, but that helps his power out. Or else Golovkin was holding Lemieux when he came on the inside. Golovkin's not an inside fighter. He's not a total inside fighter.
All you have to do is watch the Golovkin-Khabib-Uber fight.
Khabib-Uber is
a natural 154-pounder. When he got his side on Golovkin, he gave Golovkin hell. The problem with Khabib-Uber is he wasn't a hard puncher at 154. The greatness with Khabib-Uber was he had an iron cast iron chin. Golovkin couldn't keep him off of him. But the fact of the matter is that Golovkin is much like Sergey Kovalev in a sense, is that he's looked at this come forward slugger, and he's really not that. He's a boxer puncher, you know, with dynamite in his fist. I don't know what these kids eat at over there in Russia, but it's, you know, these guys have power in their fists, but they need to fight at range. Once you get inside on these guys, they don't fight as well. Not saying they're not capable inside, but Khabib-Uber was giving Golovkin hell inside just by his work rate, by his shot selection. It was forcing Golovkin to have to grab, have to push off, have to turn. Khabib-Uber, you know what he did? When Golovkin jabbed, he slipped the jab and stepped in. First of all, one thing Zito said, and one reason why we thought that this fight was going to be a blowout, Zito said this early on. He said it last week. He said Lemieux comes in on straight lines. Well, if you come in on a straight line and a guy throws a jab, guess what you're going to run into? Golovkin's not the kind of guy whose jab you want to run into, I would imagine.
Yeah, but how about how often he threw it? He held back until he totally demoralized Lemieux. He took his entire game away from him. Lemieux never had a chance. I didn't think it would be that bad of a fight.
I think that was something he showed. That was the respect he showed Lemieux. I think he had respect for Lemieux's punching power, so he went about his business in a very methodical and safe fashion. It was a very, intelligent, methodical game plan by Golovkin. He was never in danger at all.
Even as a bloodlust fighter, if you're smashing a guy's face in with a jab, you're usually happy with smashing a guy's face in. So why stop? Lemieux's not stopping it, so why should you?
And you know what? The other thing, there are two things I love about Golovkin. And Zito, I tell you, one of the things I will talk about Golovkin as far as the thing I like about him is his balance. I think his balance is impeccable. He's typically always, and I think that's what separates him from Sergey Kovalev. I think they both have those same type of skill sets, but I think Golovkin's balance is much better. He's always in a position to punch. He's always in a position to defend. So that, you know, that's one of the big things I like about Golovkin. The other thing I like about Golovkin is he has an efficiency of movement and effort. Golovkin doesn't waste any movement. And I think you saw a game plan that was strong on that. He didn't waste any energy or effort. Lemieux couldn't get past, like Zito said, he was hitting him with the jab, smashing him, according to Zito, with the jab. Lemieux couldn't get past the jab. Like you said, Dr. Chris, he went ahead and broke him down and discouraged him until he was kind of, neutered, kind of declawed. Once he neutered and declawed Lemieux, then he could step in and not worry about Lemieux's power as much. I mean, it was a very efficient and tactical and smart game plan.
Oh, I thought it was a great fight. And then I thought back over the years of all the middleweights I've ever seen. I don't know of any that could beat him.
Ooh.
Except that big Argentinian that fought for the longest time.
Close my zone.
I will tell you somebody who
might,
I will tell you somebody
be able to give Golovkin a fight. That's, I mean, I don't
I'm
know
tell
anybody
you who I think
I,
would beat him.
I'll tell you who.
You ready for this? I'm going to tell you who I think would give him hell. Jake LaMotta. I think Jake LaMotta would give him absolute hell.
You know, I'm going to be honest. I think, I'm not saying this guy would win, but I think he would give Golovkin trouble style-wise. Sergio Martinez.
Oh, wow.
I don't see Golovkin really getting a good beat on Sergio, and Sergio hits hard. You know, he hit hard. I mean, he wasn't as Then says Golovkin at 160, but I mean that guy. I still have this. I would like to see Golovkin against a Kelly Kavlik. How would that go?
Yeah, that would be great because their jabs. They had to. Yeah, he had to jab to match Golovkin because his arms are so damn long.
Yeah,
and he was bigger and taller than.
I think Jake would get a side on him. Honestly, I think Jake LaMotta would get a side on him, and I don't think Golovkin has the inside game to keep up with Jake once he got there.
He's a great body puncher, though.
Huh?
He's a great body puncher, man.
Yeah, you know what? He's a great body puncher with his range. Again, I saw him fight Kasim Uma. He damaged Uma significantly at his range. When Uma, who is, you know, was a 154-pound guy, when Uma got inside, and I'm going to tell you, the thing that made Uma, two things that Uma has that, you know, a lot of people don't have. He has a tremendous chin, and he has a high work rate. And those two things gave Golovkin hell. And he was 154. I think of a Jake LaMotta, a guy who could easily have fought at 168. You know what I mean? I mean, he obviously could, and Jake's not going to sit there. There's no way you're going to sit there and jab Jake LaMotta to death. You know,
Jake had a good jab
low. He went in low. He gave you the top of his head.
Exactly.
You want to jab a hard head, go ahead. You know what I mean? You want to hit me? He didn't give a damn.
Yeah,
Jake would have come in the ring at 175 pounds like Jake couldn't make the middleweight division anymore. If they had hydration and dehydration and all that stuff.
Exactly.
He would have been brutal. But
and remember, they didn't have 168
then,
at the time either. They only had 160. So it's not like he could say, well, you know what, I can't make middleweight. Let me go ahead to 168. It was 175.
Yeah. Yeah, he fought good at light heavy. Actually fought very well.
But hey, Dr. Chris.
How about Monzon and him? What do you think of that fight?
I think Monzon would be trouble. Because, like you said, I'm not saying, you know, again, Golovkin, he hasn't fought anyone on that level necessarily put him there.
Yeah.
But when I look at, you know, again, I completely agree with you. Monzon had everything that would give, you know, he had all the attributes that would trouble a guy like Golovkin. As far as styles make matchups, I think Monzon has a style that would definitely trouble Golovkin. Whether he'd win or not, that's something different, but he definitely would trouble him. Hey, Dr. Chris.
Yeah, nobody was ever able to reach Monzon. Nobody could ever get inside of him. He would tie you up and grab you and hold you till the ref broke it up. Then he'd go back to that. Actually, his fights were boring. They were jabbing, 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 just like the first five or six rounds of the Golovkin fight.
But kind of like Golovkin, you know, they can jab, and then you, even if you have a hard time stepping in because of the threat of the power coming too, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like Tommy Hearns had a great jab, but you didn't always want to step through it because of the right.
Yeah, Tommy Hearns, if Golovkin hit him with one body shot, Hearns is dead. Hearns would have died.
Wow.
Or opened a coffin. He would have jumped in a coffin. he had no body. Golovkin hit him in the ribs and come out the other side.
How do you think Golovkin would have did against Marvin Hagler?
We were discussing that. Me and my buddy, we were discussing that. He had a lot of height. He has a lot of height on Hagler. And Hagler would go in for the kill like he did against the I think it would be a short fight. I don't think it would be a 15-round fight. But you can't ever sell Hagler out. He's so damn tough, and he did hit hard. Mm-hmm. But he's not going to outbox Golovkin. He's not going to outbox him. He's going to have to fight the way he fought Hearns. Go in, let's have a knockdown, drag him out, fight, and let's see who's standing after two or three rounds. That was a great fight. Every time I think about it, that was a great fight. Hagler Hearns.
You know what
I picked Hagler in that fight.
And the funny thing is a lot of people were looking at this fight being kind of like Hagler Hearns. And I think, you know, just because they were looking at a shootout, and I think one of the things they were kind of forgetting is with Hagler Hearns, you had two Hall of Fame caliber fighters. In this position, you had one. You know what I mean? That doesn't always equate. Hey, Dr. Chris.
Yeah.
What did you think of the little guys? That's what I wanted to ask you. Chocolatito,
phenomenal.
Roman Gonzalez. I knew it, yeah.
He's a phenomenal fighter. Phenomenal.
Yeah.
He's as good technique-wise as you have in the ring. There's nothing he does wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, he's only 112, but he's phenomenal. I thought he was great.
And, you know, he knows how to maximize his power, too. Doesn't he? Good power for little guys.
That little skinny damn guy was knocking that guy, and he can hit. Damn,
I'm
going to be honest. Somebody 112 pounds.
I really was looking forward to get your opinion on that fight. That's the fight I wanted you to really talk about and see.
I haven't seen anybody that good. There's nothing he does wrong. Everything is perfect. And where the hell does he get all that power? I mean, he nails you. You got a good right, everything. I haven't been that impressed by anybody in a long time, but that little son of a gun, I mean, look at the way, 112?
Yeah.
He moved
up there recently, so.
Yeah, I mean, he's just phenomenal. I'd watch him all the time. If he came on pay-per-view, I'd pay to watch it, because I haven't seen a boxer that good in a long time.
Yeah.
I mean, he's highly skilled.
You know who his mentor
was,
right? Do you know who his mentor was?
No.
The Thin Man, Alexis Arguello.
Oh, yeah, in the beginning they had Arguello. You know what?
Yeah.
He's better in he's better technique-wise than Arguello ever was.
He is.
Arguello wasn't technique-wise. That guy's he's in the Willie Pep category. Top one of the top. I mean, he's just phenomenal.
He can do more than Arguello could. He could honestly do more than Arguello could. Yeah.
Hit harder
for his
weight.
Arguello
never saw the day he could box as good as that kid.
I mean, that kid puts it on you and doesn't give you anything. You know, it's not like a lot of aggressive guys give you a lot of openings. This kid, it's not like he doesn't get caught with shots, but when you're that aggressive, you are. But, man, this kid's and Brian Valoria, after the fight, he said, what surprised me was his speed and his defense. He goes, I didn't think he was going to be as hard to hit.
He has no weaknesses. None. I don't know who the hell could beat him at 112. I don't know.
Let me tell you, the kid's already proven to have a good chin. I mean, and he's fought the elite of the elite in those weight classes. He's already proven to have a good chin. He's knocked out quality opponents. The reason why he's rated higher than Golovkin is number one, I think a lot of
a lot of boxing writers kind of like just feel like, you know what, this kid can do everything. There's no flaw in this kid. And then on top of that, his resume is deeper. He's beaten elite fighters at his weight. I mean, he'll have to move up.
Nobody's going to fight him. Nobody at his weight could beat him.
There's one more guy at his weight, a guy named Juan Francisco Estrada. And let me tell you, Dr. Chris, I'm thoroughly impressed with this guy. Juan Francisco Estrada is about 2 years younger than Gonzalez. They fought in 2012 or 2013. Gonzalez won the decision. That was the last time Estrada lost. It was a unanimous decision. I watched the fight. It was a good fight. Estrada won a lot of rounds. He's a rangy boxer with good power, good fast hands. So he was moving about mm-hmm. the ring. Good style matchup. But, going into the sixth or seventh round, I had Gonzalez up like 4-2. But then, mm-hmm. The pressure and the Chocolatito just started, boring in on him. But the big fight that HBO have been looking for is to rematch Gonzalez and Estrada because, again, that was the guy who's given Gonzalez the best fight, and it was Estrada's like 10-0 with like 7 knockouts since then and has also moved up and won a belt at 112. So that's the biggest fight in the lightweight divisions that can be made, and HBO is looking to do that probably within the next fight or two.
Well, you'll see this kid again and again because he's a delight to watch. I mean, true boxing, guys that love boxing, we haven't seen many guys like this. This guy, I just was amazed by him. I mean, how about his hand speed?
Yeah. I was amazed with his foot position. Hands. I like the way he was always in position.
He's always in position to punch or defend. Oh. The thing that I like about him over Golovkin is I think he's not, I think he's not quite as leaky defensively, but I mean he's a much, much better combination puncher than Golovkin, and I think Golovkin's a pretty good guy. But this guy, wow,
he can fight everywhere. Fight outside, he can fight inside, he can fight mid range, he can fight shoulder to shoulder. I mean, he can fight everywhere.
Yeah, he's just amazing. You want to take the great boxers, like Sugar Ray. I remember them interviewing Sugar Ray and Jerry Lewis, and they said to Sugar Ray, who's the best boxer you ever saw? He said, Willie Pep. He said, he can make moves I can't make for the simple reason he only weighs 126 pounds.
Yeah.
He said I'd have my legs crossed and be falling down trying to make the moves Pep makes. He said, but I'm 160. I can't move like him. Jerry Lewis said, me either. But I mean, I've always admired a guy that could do everything perfect, and I think this kid's perfect. He's perfect. There's nothing. I don't know who's going to ever beat him. I don't know. If he moves up to 118, somebody might have a shot.
There's a Japanese kid named Toko Ayu, and the kid is he's like maybe like 10-0 with 8 knockouts, but he's gotten a title, and he is he's big, and he's 115, which is the next weight division up for Chocolatito, and after Estrada, that would be the big fight. That would be a big test for him because this kid's bigger.
Is that the kid with the funny
younger
looking hair? He dyes his hair. The Jeff that dyes his hair.
That's not him.
At
115, there's this African guy named Zolani Tate. He went over to Britain and beat their champion, knocked him out. And this Zolani Tate guy, he's like 21-1 with like 18, 17 knockouts. This African guy is literally, he's fighting at 115, but he's every bit of 5'10 or 5'11. So, I mean, there's some matchups for him at 115 that just from a physicality standpoint aren't favorable to him. So, I mean, if he were to go up and beat those guys, damn.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would sit and really enjoy seeing a guy that, could give that kid a fight. Because I really want to see if he's as good as he looked to me night. I mean, he looked,
Hey, buddy, how you doing?
But he is
Dr. Chris, if he lost in his next fight, Trust me, he's as good as he looks. Because he's already, I mean, he's beaten all the top guys in the lower weights.
And the kid's only move up to get him. Yeah.
He, like I said, he's got the one more fight at 112 with, the, you know, the biggest challenge at 112 is the rematch with Estrada. But, again, he's already beat him. Now, again, Estrada's 2 years younger, and Estrada's gotten a lot better, too. But, you know, Chuck Latito would go in as the favorite, though. So I think his big challenge is outside of Estrada lie at 115. But, yeah, the kid is phenomenal, though, man. He is phenomenal.
Yeah, I really liked him. You had told me about this fight, and I put it on early. I don't usually watch all of it for him, but I put it on early because you told me about this guy. I couldn't believe it. He's better than I thought he was. And, you know, I haven't seen anybody come across the screen like that in a long, long time.
Yeah.
Damn, he's good. You know, he just doesn't – he has it all. He's one of the few guys – well, that's why right away they ranked him pound for pound the best guy.
Yeah, he was number two behind Floyd. You know, once Pacquiao kind of got knocked out, he was put number two behind Floyd. And so once Floyd retired, he was the logical number one guy. And because a lot of people who know boxing like yourself, Dr. Chris, they see that this kid right now does everything in the book.
Against
good, good right hand, a good left hook. The combination punches beautifully. He just, I mean, and he's always... The only thing I didn't like, he stays on his right side. He jabs and moves his head to the right a little bit. Somebody could hit him with the right hand when he does that.
And
somebody
could nail
him with a right hand.
That's what made the Estrada fight interesting, because Estrada was quick and clever enough. And Estrada varies up his 1-2 with a lot of feints and a lot of different footwork. And so he was catching Gonzalez pretty cleanly with right hands throughout the fight. The problem, Gonzalez proved that not only can he do everything in the book, but he has a really good chin, too. And he just walked through the shots and kept doing what he was doing. And that was just like,
it didn't faze him. He can be hit with right hands, but, you know, not too often.
Yeah, and
He
takes a punch. You know, it's almost not fair to have a guy that skilled be able to also really take a good punch. You know what I mean? You know, you finally get past all that skill and land a punch, and that's a guy who just looks at you and walks forward. You know, you don't want that.
Oh, that's terribly discouraging when you do that.
If a guy can take a punch, you want him to fight like Margarito, like Antonio Margarito. You know, that guy you expect to take a punch. You don't expect a technician to come and take your punches, but... Yes, that's what he did. And Valoria, the guy he's fighting, Valoria is a very good fighter. You know, he wasn't fighting a bad fighter either.
No. I'm looking forward to seeing him again. You know, like I look forward to watching, you know, there's some great fighters to watch, you know, Provotnikov, Glock, you know, but this kid, I just enjoy him as much as anybody. How far away are we from the Big Moose fighting Klitschko?
Big Moose.
A couple weeks.
When did they reschedule that fight, Butch? November?
November 7th or 8th.
Okay.
Yeah, pretty soon.
Very soon.
Pretty soon. That fight's got me interested. I really, really can't wait to see that one. You know? I'm going to see. I can't. You know, first of all, I don't think he's 6'9". He's about 6'7", isn't he?
Well, that's what Vladimir said. Vladimir said that, you know, he's listed as 6'9", but Vladimir said he's not 6'9". He's more like 6'7½". That's what Vladimir said.
Yeah, he's not 6'9", but I watched him against Cunningham. He's not 6'9", but he is big. You know?
He's bigger than Vladimir, and he's younger. That's definitive.
And I'm, you know, Vladimir, he you don't know who's going to show up. You don't know, you know, the jab and hold, Vladimir is going to show up, or is he going to fight like he did against that big Bulgarian, you know? I don't know. That guy, I can't ever figure Vladimir out. I don't know what the hell he's going to do when he gets in the ring. You don't know. But I think
Vladimir, it's a lot to do with the level of his competition, I think.
Yeah, he usually fights better with better competition. That's what I said before,
I honestly also think that the Pulev fight, the big Bulgarian, also, honestly, I think that was a bit of an anomaly, too, because for once, Vladimir didn't have a guy trying to get in close to him. He had a guy who fought him at his range, but fought him at his range with significantly worse technique. Pulev led with his left down, and he had his right at his chest. And Vladimir's a long guy, and he didn't have the reflexes to get out of the way when Vladimir just turned over his hook from the jab. So even though he looked so devastating against Pulev, I think, you know, the real Vladimir, you know, is closer to the guy we saw against Brian Jennings and the guy we saw against Pulev. I think the Pulev style was actually tailor-made for Vladimir. That's really what I think it came down to.
Yeah.
He was a guy who fought on one straight line and was wide open and who didn't have the reflexes to get out the way.
Pulev had more openings. Jennings, one thing about Jennings is he has that long reach.
Yeah,
so
he didn't give up. He didn't give you. He also, you know what? When he came, if he was in Vladimir's punching range, he had a high guard. He protected his chin. Mm-hmm. Pulev left his chin out there to hang, and when Pulev fought like he was fighting a 6'1" fighter, and you can't do that against a guy who's taller than you. So to me, it was tailor made for Vladimir. I think Fury is capable of making the same type of stupid mistakes that Pulev is capable, you know, made. But I just think Fury's going to bring more to the table because I think he does more than Pulev.
And I think Fury's tougher. I think Fury's just a tougher fighter, just inside determination. Fury will go down and he'll get up. I mean, he's not a guy, and he won't change tactics. I mean,
well, that was the difference because Pulev went down and got up and just tried to say things harder.
Whereas
Fury's going to go down and go up and be like, oh, you know what? I can't do that. I got to do something different. Yeah, Fury's going to realize that.
I mean, he has that fight. He has a pretty good fight IQ that's getting better.
It is.
His confidence has a lot to do with this fight. Fury's confidence, I think, is going to be a big determinant factor.
And you know what, I think what you said is a very good point. I think, any chance that Fury has to win, and obviously, again, like I was saying earlier, you got to favor Vladimir. But any chance that Fury has to win lies in the fact that, you know, he has the size and youth advantage, but he also is starting to develop a pretty decent fight IQ. Simple as that. Don't know if it's going to be enough to compensate for everything Vladimir brings, but that's what makes him an interesting challenge, though.
You know what else? I want to see somebody test Vladimir's heart. I ain't sure he's gifted with all the guts in the world. And if Fury can get up, you know, I think he's faint-hearted. I he's nowhere near tough as his brother was. His brother was tough.
No.
This guy. If somebody will test his heart, I think they'll win the fight. Now, I don't know that much about Tyson Fury.
I don't think Vladimir has the heart. I don't think he's too soft to quit on the stool. I don't think he'll ever quit on the stool. But I can see him doing some quit in the ring things. I mean, just action wise in the ring, I can see him doing some, you know, complaining to the ref every, you know, a whole lot.
I see that.
A lot of just in the demeanor, in the fight demeanor, him kind of checking out mentally a little bit. I see him with that kind of part. If you don't just flat out knock him out, because his skin is kind of crazy.
Guys, as fight fans, we all know when we're watching a fight when you could tell one guy no longer wants to be there. And I think I agree with you. That's what I would see with Vladimir before he would quit, because I don't think I think he has
Vladimir
more heart
than
that.
He's a pride.
He's so gifted with size and talent.
Yep.
You know, nobody ever
really
tested his heart. As soon as they do, I got a funny feeling you're going to see a little crack.
You know what? He's never been in a dog fight, and part of the reason why is because when a dog attacked him, he just got eaten up. You know what I mean? He didn't have a chance to fight back. So, said, for his heart to be tested, he has to get to that point. One thing he will do is he will get up. Kind of like Amir Khan. Amir Khan will get up. The fact of the matter is these are the guys who get up, but they're more contact averse. They really, instead of getting up and saying, I got to get this guy back, they get up and say, man, I got to get the hell away from this guy. So I think Vladimir is more that guy. His brother's going to get up and try to get that guy back.
Yeah.
Yeah. Vladimir, he'll be looking for the exit door if Fury gets up a couple of times. You know? Where the hell's the exit door? In case of a fire, I want to get out of here, man. You know?
Yeah, I can see that. I can see that.
Guys, we're up against the clock.
Like I say, it's really an unknown factor here. You know, we don't know what Tyson Fury is. I mean, he's got the right name. You know, look, Tyson Fury, that's a fight. That's the name of a fighter, man.
That's the name of a heavyweight champion, Dr. Chris.
He took Mike Tyson's name, Tyson Fury.
Yeah.
Now, we're going to say that name. We're going to see what it gets him, you know. I'm sure he's going to be a comical champion. You know, he's going to be if he makes it. He'll really draw the crowd back.
He'll have a big fan base.
Yeah.
He'll have a big fan base. And that'll be, you know what? It was like boxing needs a guy like you remember the Prince?
Oh, Nassim Ahmed, yes.
That guy was hysterical. That was the greatest act in boxing. And to this day, my old trainer said he threw that fight. The odds were 6-1 against him, and he threw that fight and walked away with more money than anybody. I said, Z, come on, he didn't throw that. He threw that fight. He said, with all his ability, that wasn't a good fight for him. And that's what he argued. I went to his dying day, he argued with me about that. Because I really enjoyed seeing the Prince. He was funny. And he did all kind of crazy stuff. The little guy had a lot of talent, too.
Yeah.
And that's what Tyson. But he developed a huge following real fast.
And then all of a sudden
he was gone. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So I think Tyson Fury would really draw a big fan base. It wouldn't take him long.
Yeah.
But we'll see. We don't have to wait long.
Nope.
You know?
Sure.
Anybody on tonight?
Yes, sir. I was just about to tell you, Dr. Chris, tonight, HBO, 10 o'clock, they're going to show, I believe, a replay of the Golovkin and the Gonzalez fights. And the main event is Terrence Crawford against Thierry Jean out of Omaha, Nebraska.
That's a good fighter there, boy. Damn good fighter, that kid. Yeah, hell of a fight, then. Well, I'll have something to watch tonight. That'll be good.
Yes, sir.
All right,
yes,
guys,
sir.
I guess we're up against the clock.
Yes,
Frank,
sir.
Frank, take it easy.
All right,
I'll
thanks,
see
Chris.
You guys.
Have a great week.
All right, take care, man. Bye.
All right, stay healthy.
Talk to you later, Dr. Chris.
Okay, Z, you want to lead us out?
Sure do. Another wonderful show. I want to thank Dr. Chris, always enlightening and entertaining. I want to thank you guys. These shows are definitely in memory of Bob. And if anyone wants to hear any fighting words, please do call. Ta.
Hey, it's been a great show. Love talking to you guys. I wish all you well. Have a good week. Thanks, Dr. Chris, for joining in. Bob is our co-pilot. Everyone take care.
Yeah, I want to thank Dr. Chris, Z, and Ty for a great, great show. Hopefully next week we will have Lamont. He did have something he had to do tonight, but he said he will. He promised me he will be in very shortly, so I'm going to be on the phone with him first thing tomorrow morning, Lamont Peterson for the show, and also Dan Birmingham wants to get back on, so we're going to give him a chance next week also. So should be a great show, as all these shows have been and will continue to be with the input of the broadcasters that are on with us. These programs are dedicated to those who lost their lives in the line of duty. I'm sorry. These programs are dedicated to the men and women of the United States Armed Forces and Police and Fire Services, and especially to those who've lost their life in this line of duty. Deputy Robert Anthony Carroll, Patrolman David Curtis, Patrolman Jeffrey Colcap, Sergeant Thomas Batinger, Patrolman Jeffrey Yazowitz, Patrolman David Crawford, Detective Randy Bell, Detective Ricky Childers, San Diego Officer Mike Hendler, Lieutenant Mike Zerba, Newcastle County Police, Patrolman Arnolfo Crispin, Lakeland PD, Deputy Barbara Pell, Broward County Sheriff's Office, Chief Al Hogle, Longo Key Police Department, Chief Jimmy Ford, Wilmington Fire Department, Highway Patrolman Alonzo Moses, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Lazaro, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Murphy, Plymouth Township PA Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Bob Neary, Philadelphia Fire Department, Chief Mike Godwin, Philadelphia Fire Department, MIT Officer Sean Collier, Sergeant Mike Wilson, Charlotte County Sheriff's Office, Deputy Jonathan Scott Pine, Orange County Sheriff's Office, Patrolman Robert Germain, Windermere, Florida Police Department, Trooper Chelsea Richards, Florida Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Joyce Craig Lewis, Philadelphia Fire Department, Patrolman Charlie Condit, Tarpon Springs Police Department, Patrolman Robert Wilson, Philadelphia Police Department, Louisiana Trooper Steve Vincent, Harris County Deputy Darrell Goforth, and Lake County Lieutenant Joseph Kozlowinski. My brothers and sisters, although you may be 10-7 at this point in time, sometime in the near future we'll be 10-10 at the table of the Lord. Until that time, may the rose rise up to meet you, may the winds be always at your back, may the rains fall softly on your fields and the sun shine lightly on your face. Until we meet again, may the good Lord keep you and your families always in the hollow of his hand. Good night together.
Shem alek ma yilama, shem ahezah yilama, son ashen evorat fed, hakuig again ma yilama.
All units be advised, 1999 has responded to his last emergency. May God rest his soul. Bob. We love you and we miss you.